You guys are here.
Whoa, how did you get here?
How did you get here?
And how are you dry?
How are you dry?
Guys, and welcome back to Schlock and Awe, the double feature podcast that celebrates all movies from the sublime to the suspicious. And as always, I'm Lindsay Wilkins. And today, it's going to be a girls' night out with a double feature of Olivia Wilde's directorial debut of Booksmart and the surprisingly charming Slumber Party Massacre 2. And to sit down with me for the screening, he is great. He is one half of the Good Times, Great Movies podcast, which is all about 80s. And I have to say, if you want him to try and do an Angela Lansbury kind of European French accent when he says baby a lot, then Doug McCambridge is your guy. And he's here. Hey, how's it going?
Lindsay, thank you so much for having me, but basically for finally giving in after me begging you to be on your show. I appreciate it.
No worries. No, with vaccines and life and everything like that, it took a while to get this all organized and together. So it's great to have you on. Thank you so much.
No, I mean, we could have done this originally, but I was feverish, which may be the best way to talk about Slumber Party Massacre 2, so maybe that would have actually been preferable to what we're doing now.
It might have been, because that movie is a very bizarre musical, Fever Dream, which I did not know musicals could appear in Fever Dreams, but apparently they can.
Yeah, full entire songs, not just snippets or anything like that, full-on songs beginning to end.
Yes, and you could probably class this as a musical. I think it's padding, personally, but now it's a delightful musical.
You think so? Think maybe a little bit?
Just a little bit. Before we get into that, tell me how Good Times, Great Movies is going.
Sure, I am one half of, as you said, the podcast Good Times, Great Movies, and like you said, we just stay within the 80s. We pick and choose movies based on themes like time of year, and if something happens to align with an actor's birthday or something like that, but we kind of just kick around movies from the 80s, like kind of take the piss out of them a little bit, even if it's something we love, even if they're absolutely great movies. There's always something to sort of have fun talking about at the movie's expense. But we are coming up on our 6th anniversary of doing the show, and it really is a blast. It's honestly just an excuse for me to talk to an old college friend of mine, and for some reason it's lasted 6 years.
6 years is an achievement. I started this November last year. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine 6 years, but at the same time I can, especially because, as you said, it's an excuse to talk to an old friend of yours, and the amount of people I've connected through this podcast is incredible. That I talk to regularly now, so it's great.
I think that's what's more impressive about what you're doing. I mean, she and I, we just have to basically align times to get together. You have to go and reach out to people and schedule guests. I couldn't imagine having to do all that. So, again, I appreciate you having me on, because you're doing a lot more legwork than I do for that podcast. I just watch a movie, and it's also every other week. You're putting this out more regularly than we are, so that's good on you, honestly.
Oh, well, when I go all in or something, I go all in, and if I probably had thought about what was involved, I don't know if I quite would have done it, and then I just kind of sent a whole thing of things, like, can you just be on my new podcast, please? No, thinking most of the people would say no, and actually they haven't, which... still surprises me.
No, that's great. I mean, for us, it was, strangely enough, a good amount of forethought with the two of us sitting down and going, I don't know, two movies per month, that sounds reasonable. I can sit around and watch movies for 3 to 4 hours a month and then talk about them.
I'm more of an addictive personality when it comes, especially comes to movies. So I'm just like going, oh, more movies. And then I suddenly get tired and wonder why.
I mean, but the other thing is, you're watching some pretty great stuff for this. And I'm not going to say that we don't cover great movies on my show, but boy, do I have to sit through some stuff that I wish I hadn't have had to.
I'm sorry, you've just done The Forest and Lace. What is not great about those?
First of all, I will say that Lace was fantastic. I will now go to bat for that movie. When we saw the runtime of that and realized it was 4 hours, I think neither of us were looking forward to that. But upon watching it, I could revisit that, to be honest.
No, I have vague memories of that when I was a kid. Probably something I should not have been watching, but for some reason it was on television. I was like, oh, Phoebe Cates, cool. And yes, I need to track that down and watch that again, actually.
Sure.
And with that, we are going to be getting into sitting down for our first double feature. Of course, this is Booksmart, which feels like it was released 5 years ago, but it was only 2009. Okay, so if the trailers are going to be playing beforehand, what would your first trailer be for Booksmart?
So my first trailer, I am not going to say that this is a great film, but my first trailer is the 1990 film House Party, starring Kid and Play.
If my pops finds out I got in trouble in school today, I'm definitely going to be on punishment. There's a party tonight at Peter's house. Can I go?
You're not going nowhere. Every little step you take will be around this bedroom tonight.
Did you hear anything about a party tonight?
At least not any good ones.
Hello, Tawatha. Do I feel like being bothered with Tawatha? Hello, LaDonna.
What you got to say now, punk?
How much more trouble can I get into?
Hey, Eraserhead.
The reason I chose this is there's something about Booksmart, and we'll get into it. First and foremost, I appreciate you pitching a movie or pairing a movie here that was made within the past couple years, because I really don't seek out a lot of new movies, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that later on. But what I liked about this is how sort of, and this is not a backhanded compliment, but how inconsequential everything was that happened in this movie. Like, it's just fun.
Yes.
And it's one of those movies that really captures the spirit of how important high school or that age seems at the time. But when you take a step back, you realize it isn't. None of this is life or death. Even run-ins with the police and even, you know, the drug and alcohol, quote unquote, abuse is no big deal whatsoever. And House Party is such a stupid movie that is a lot lighter than this one. But it really is, again, sort of inconsequential. It's just two idiots having fun, and at the end of the day, that's all the movie is.
I have not seen this movie in years. No, I need to rewatch it, and you're right. I think it is just a, hey, let's have fun, which is very much Booksmart all the way.
Yes.
No, that is a great, great trailer. I think I remember the trailer being really, really funny as well. So, no, that is going to be perfect.
Oh, yeah, it's not music I listened to as a kid. I was not really into rap, but you knew who they were. I mean, you basically just knew those haircuts.
And oh, yes.
It was one of those things where I saw that trailer and immediately I was like, I have to watch this dumb movie. Like, I'm sure it's terrible, but, you know, 1990, I would have been about, you know, 15 years old. I was like, I am totally in on this movie. I need to find it. I need to watch it right now.
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes I love that feeling when you're watching a trailer and you're knowing like this movie is not going to be good or whatever the standard definition textbook thing of good is. But in this moment, it's exactly what I need. And no, I've always loved movies like that. So this is absolutely perfect. I decided to go with a recent comedy as well, but one that starts off as inconsequential but tends to have huge consequences. and that, well, not really, but that is Game Night from 2018.
We're down to two teams. So for double points, what is the name of the purple Teletubby?
Tinky Winky.
Ooh, I'm a rebel just for kicks.
Max is very competitive, as am I. It's one of the reasons I fell in love with him.
Oh, this is easy. He was Incredible Hulk.
Eric Bana.
Other one.
Mark Ruffalo.
Other one.
Lou Ferrigno.
Primal Fear.
Richard Gere never played the Incredible Hulk.
Time.
Jesus Christ. Ed Norton.
Primal Fear.
Guys, what do you say we do this at my house next week?
This will be a game night to remember.
Oh, boy.
This movie is a joy. Again, kind of like Booksmart. It is Rachel McAdams, Jason Bateman, mm-hmm. a whole bunch of other people, because I didn't write down the names of the people. But basically, they're having one of those Michael Douglas, the game nights, except they kind of think they think they're playing it, but then it turns out they've actually gotten in themselves into a massive caper with actual people with guns, and then you have Rachel McAdams in a bar with pointing a gun at people in a bar, making them do child's pose in yoga because she thinks it's all fake. And it is one of the most delightful things you've ever seen in your life. So that's going to be my first trailer.
Is it? I haven't seen it, and I feel like I get it. It's lumped in with something like, you know, Blockers, again, another movie that I haven't seen but feels maybe like it's the same. Or what was the other? Was it a Jason Bateman movie with Tag where it's just a bunch of friends that play tag?
Yes, right? Yes.
Okay, it feels like these are all very similar, but my question for you, not having seen it, is it something that starts out as just a joyous romp and becomes very dark, like a Pineapple Express, or not?
A touch, yes, but it still keeps its joy.
Okay, all right.
Even when they...
I remember watching Pineapple Express, and you know, the last third of that movie, I was like, this is not what I was on board for. Like, I am very uncomfortable. I do not enjoy this suddenly.
No, you still enjoy what you're doing, even when they kind of figure out that, oh, crap, this is real.
Okay.
I would say... you still kind of, it still keeps its tone of them actually going, oh, actually, okay, this is real, we're in this, but you don't kind of feel uncomfortable as in you're like, oh no, people are going to die now? No, they're much more, it's better at tone, I would say, than Pineapple Express.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, I might have to check it out then.
Yes, oh, and actually check out Blockers, because it's funnier than you think it's going to be, which I was really surprised by, because I was like going... this is going to be so dumb, and I'm just going to be groaning through all of it. And I was like going, huh, there's a little touch of groans here and there, but it's actually more funny in places where you were not expecting it. So, no, Blockers, check out. Tag, you can probably miss, unless you're on a plane.
Okay.
It's, yeah. I can't all believe I've seen all those three.
Okay, no, I mean, knowing the smallest amount about all three of those, I probably could have figured out to skip that one. So.
Yeah, dumb comedies is a thing I always watch with my partner, and we're watching the working tag, and I'm just like, oh, yeah, this is exactly the comedy I thought it was going to be.
All right.
What would be your second trailer?
My second trailer, I'm going to go a little bit darker here, mm-hmm. and something a little more obscure. The scene in Booksmart that I really loved, that I absolutely loved, was the underwater pool scene. That grabbed me. I was enthralled by that entire scene. So strangely enough, I was like, I need to find some other film that has an interesting underwater pool scene.
Mm.
And I did absolutely no research, so maybe I could have come up with something better. But I'm going to go with the 2008 vampire movie, Let the Right One In.
Är du vampyr? Hade du tyckt om mig ändå?
Oh, fascinating. I love it. Yes. No, perfect.
Yeah.
It
has nothing. It has no relation whatsoever to Booksmart. I mean, you know what? It's a bullied preteen who develops a friendship with a little vampire girl. So they're a little bit younger than the characters of this, or perhaps in the vampires, a little bit older than these girls. But the movie does culminate in just an absolutely, like, horrifically beautiful underwater scene.
It is. It's especially, I've seen this movie, like, quite a few times in the past this year. Mm-hmm. For some reason, it was one of those pandemic movies that made me feel comforted, which is very strange to say. You see a limb.
It's a gorgeous movie.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous movie. You see a limb fall in the pool, don't you? Like, mm-hmm. when he's been held under. Yeah, and you're just like, that's your first sign of just like, oh, something. Yeah, that is, it is a gorgeous, gorgeous scene.
No, it's a really fantastic movie. I haven't watched the U.S. remake of it. From what I hear, it's relatively faithful, which makes me think that there might be no reason for me to take a look at it. But I absolutely love this film. I think, like I said, it's really beautiful. And I sort of understand how you could see it as a comfort movie. Mm. You know, it's not upsetting really in any way. It really is a sort of vampiric character study or a vampiric, coming of age film, if you want to think of it that way.
It is. You're kind of seeing the point of view from two sociopaths, because I think Oscar is, he's leaning toward that way. And so their friendship and their connection is absolutely beautiful, but it's just on this kind of twisted level. And the movie's actually really funny, darkly funny. Yeah. Those moments when her first assistant that you meet in the movie that just cannot get it together to actually kill anyone or get the blood from the person he's just killed. It's a running joke that I just always find delightful. But
I agree 100%.
But it is about their friendship. And I think, that is a really great trailer. And especially because now you give me permission to use my own dark trailer. So we're going to really confuse people before they get into this light, fluffy, adorable film. It's great. And I do love the friendship between the two kids. And I think that is perfect. That is a perfect trailer. But we'll get into my second, trailer. And since you went dark, I'm going dark. So I'm going to go with Collateral from 2004. I'm going Michael Mann.
Hey, come on. I'll take
it. I got 5 stops to make.
What's your name?
Max.
Max. I'm Vincent.
I'll meet you in the alley behind the building.
Oh, no! What the hell? You killed him.
Red light, Max.
Hold on.
Man, you were gonna drive me around tonight and never be the wiser, but we're into plan B. Now, we gotta make the best of it. Improvise, adapt to the environment. Whatever, man, we gotta roll with it.
Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx driving around in a one crazy night movie.
Okay, I was going to ask you what the connection was, but yeah, it is a one crazy night movie. Now this, I have to admit, I saw it once. It was a very, very long time ago. Mm. I do like most Michael Mann. I don't think I'm a fan in the way that a lot of other people I know are. I remember this movie looking very good and being very slick in the Michael Mann-y way that he directs. But what are your thoughts? Like, why does this movie sort of connect with Booksmart? Why is it something, not even so much that, but why is it something that you went to?
I don't know. My brain went there and I'm not entirely sure exactly why it did, but the whole, these two trying to work it out together, this whole kind of one crazy night running around LA. And even though I think Booksmart, you can safely say, is LA. Or a suburb of LA. I have no idea, LA geography. But there was this kind of sense of urgency that, of course, man gets when you progress, when you put a hitman who takes a taxi driver hostage. And there's a sense of urgency. And there is this sense of urgency, especially from Beanie Feldstein's Molly's character, as she needs to get to this party. And Tom Cruise needs to get to this job done. So he's always trying to convince Jamie Foxx, oh, you need to go here, I'm tying your hands to the wheel. But Molly is just constantly forcing Caitlin Dever's character to know, we are doing this together. We are absolutely doing this together. And there's this weird sense of urgency that happens as if sort of friendship goes these lulls and highs throughout the movie. And so I just kind of went to Collateral.
No, that's fine. I mean, and speaking of Booksmart and the sense of urgency, that really is something that plays throughout the film. The other thing with this that I found very amusing, and I don't know if I was supposed to. I had no sense of how time was passing in this movie.
Oh, no.
Like, there were times where I was like, it's got to be 4 a.m. What is happening right now? And it's still, there are people out and about. Like, there's stuff going on. I'm like, time is not tracking right. I have no idea what time of night it is right now.
No, that is absolutely true. With Collateral, you know exactly what time and what's going on.
Right, right.
Book smart, none. I swear they could have been doing this for 3 days, and I would have been just fine with it. With that, we're going to begin. Getting in to Booksmart.
I can't hear you. I can't soundproof glass.
We have to go to a party tonight.
What?
Nobody knows that we are fun. We didn't party because we wanted to focus on school and get into good colleges.
And it worked.
But the irresponsible people who partied also got into those colleges.
I'm incredible at hand jobs, but I also got a 1560 on the SATs.
We haven't done anything. We haven't broken any rules.
Name one person whose life was so much better because they broke a couple of rules.
Picasso.
He broke art rules.
Rosa Parks.
Name another
Susan
one.
Susan B. Anthony.
God damn it.
Yes, speaking sort of absolutely no time restraints, but this was your first watch of this movie. And how did you go with it?
I love this movie. I really did. I was so happy that you paired this. And I tried to get a sense from your past episodes as to how you work the pairings, because I don't know if people sometimes bring you both movies, or do you suggest one to pair with what they choose, or does it depend episode by episode?
It depends by episode by episode. Sometimes they'll bring both. Sometimes they'll bring one. Okay. I suggest the other. Sometimes I'll give both. So, it really just depends.
Okay. Because, I mean, I came to you with Slumber Party Massacre, and I have to say I was confused as to why you chose this, again not having seen it, but watching this film, and I feel this way watching both. It is a delight. Like, both of these are just pure joy to sit there and watch these films. I was so happy to watch this, and it really was light, and it was fun, and when it comes down to it, it's just this wonderful friendship that you watch, and that you sort of sit, I mean, if you want to sit back and, you know, like I did after the fact, and just watch it and be like, well, that's sort of, I don't want to look at this, you know, in a negative sense, but this is sort of the end of this friendship, the end of this relationship, or at least what this relationship had been for 4+ years, I'm going to say. I think you and I are roughly, you know, very close in age, and we sort of see that. People that you're great friends with in high school, I don't know about you, but I rarely ever talk to any of those people again. And it doesn't matter how close you were at that time. So to look at this in sort of a sad way, that's what I got from it. But also, they at times seem to acknowledge it, but it's not this overarching thing that plays through the entire film. And it would have been, I think, a more depressing watch if they constantly went back to the idea of, you're going to go to school, you're going to go away, we may never see each other again, blah, blah, blah. They do bring it up from time to time, but that's not necessarily what this film is about. It's just about two great friends having a wonderful night together, and we actually get to watch it happen.
Yeah, you're right. It is about the end of a friendship, or an end of the friendship that they had, because they might meet up in a year or 2 years, but they're not going to have that same dynamic, because they're just, these two obviously see each other every single day, or at least talk every single day. And it's been that way for 4 years, and that can develop into a very intense emotional connection and sort of friendship. And I think you're right. They kind of know it, but they're kind of both pretending it's not going to happen until someone forces their hand or something like that. And even right at the end, they're still giving that one last, oh, let's go get waffles. Yes, absolutely.
It was a wonderful way to end this. I was so happy it ended that way. I would have been totally fine. Sadness, tears, driving away. I would have been 100% fine with that ending.
Yes.
But this made it all the better.
It really, really did. And it works so, so well, because it's kind of let them, that you kind of get the sense that they're going to be okay. Have you ever seen Sing Street?
No, I haven't.
Okay. You need to, because it's amazing, another modern movie. But again, it's got that same sense of this ending could have been a disaster. This ending could have been so dark and depressing. But there's one moment at the end where you're just like going, oh, no, they're going to be okay. It's, yeah, and I get the same sense from the ending of Booksmart. But Booksmart for me is just such a fun, light, gorgeous. I mean, some of the emotional stuff doesn't necessarily work for me personally. Mm-hmm. But those moments of just the weirdness and the outlandishness and the fact that this is one night that technically should have lasted 3 days, and all the characters around them and the performances from Beanie and Caitlin, and kind of where the weirdness goes with this movie. I love how this movie just kind of will detach from reality for a moment and then come back. It's a very moment-by-moment movie, and it is an absolute delight to watch.
I was wildly impressed with the performances because, I mean, they're on camera the entire time.
Yes,
I mean,
they are.
There are segments where we follow one or the other, but for the bulk of this movie, I mean, they are both there. They're carrying this thing throughout, and for actors of that age, I know they're playing a little bit younger, of course. It was quite impressive. And the other thing I really appreciated with this is, I don't want to compare it to movies like Mean Girls or even, you know, Jawbreaker or Clueless or something like that, even though I feel like it sort of fits with those. I love how the family dynamic in this is all but ignored. Like,
yes.
I enjoyed Lisa Kudrow. I enjoyed Will Forte.
As always.
Yeah, and I thought they were really funny when they were on screen, but you don't need it. You don't need them. You don't need, I mean, we don't meet Molly's parents at all, unless I'm mistaken.
Nope.
And we don't need to. Who cares? It doesn't matter. These are just high school kids living in a high school world, and I am on board for all of that.
Oh, me too. And I love the moments when they are just all together and kind of riffing on each other. You get that sense of these kids are about to go into the world and it's going to be chaos because they're 18 and it's going to be chaos kind of for everyone. And so essentially, the adults don't matter. Even kind of the teacher, Mrs. I can't remember her name. She kind of reverts back to being a teenager when she's in here. So it's kind of this movie that if you get sucked in, you will be a teenager in this movie. It's you kind of get turned into a Barbie doll and, oh, I am now 18 again.
Yeah. Yeah, and I found it very convincing. I'm going to say, unlike perhaps a movie we'll talk about in a little bit where there are, you know, ladies in their, you know, mid to late 20s playing 16 or whatever. All of the actors in this, I was buying it completely from everyone. I never once thought this was a, you know, sort of 90210 situation or anything like that. They appeared to be high school students. They acted like high school students. And it was wildly convincing throughout.
Except for Billy Lord, but I love her, and I love the fact that she is absolutely playing this batshit crazy 90210, are you really a high school student kind of creature that was of this other world. And, I mean, talk about the best entrance into a movie. Gigi's driving with the car, and she's yelling at him to keep going, keep going, falls out, and then is just lying on the car. You just get the sense of, what is this creature? And the fact that she just keeps popping up everywhere, it just to cause mayhem, is just the absolute delight. I love Billy Lord in this movie.
Yeah, I really thought, who's the guy that plays Nick? I don't know his...
Nick. Oh, I think he's Cuba Gooding Jr.'s kid. I think he's a Cuba. Yes, because I was reading that was quite a few people of family members of, like, Billy Lord, and I'm pretty sure Nick is a Cuba.
Okay. Yeah, he was great too. Like, you know, and what I really appreciated about this is it didn't fall into the typical cliched sort of high school cliques. It did that a little bit early on when they were actually in high school.
Yes.
But then when they went to the party, it was so nice to just sort of see all of that kind of fall away. And it was just all of these people that were roughly the same age hanging out. And it wasn't, they didn't exclude these girls, even though these girls were never included in the first place, you know? And it was almost one of those things where everyone, depending on who they were, who they hung out with, also had this sense of sort of, this is it, this is the end, so why would we exclude anybody at this point? It doesn't matter anymore.
It really does. It is, because you sort of get that first scene, when Beanie's Molly is in the bathroom and she hears the other guys just making fun of her. So she comes out and is all bolshy and goes, you know what, I'm going to go to a good school. You guys are losers. I'll see you on the reunion when you guys are pretty much, I'm president of the United States. And of course it all just turns around and goes, we're also going to good schools. You're an idiot. You're just an asshole. And I kind of love that, because it's the kind of realization of, she's obviously had this idea of, she just works hard, she's going to get to a good school, and she's going to leave all these people behind that she doesn't like. And to know that they're on her level, and yet could clown around and be assholes and be is kind of a wonderful setup to make her go, right, I did all my high school wrong. and then to go to the party and realize, oh, one, those cliques don't actually matter. What you think of people is not what you there actually are, because high school keeps defining you, in even though that's a very movie concept. Though high school does, well, at least my high school experience did kind of, because I went to a girls' high school, so that is definitely an environment where you're going to be put into little boxes. But it's kind of this cool kind of thing. And just to sort of see, I love that scene in the bathroom so much, because it's just like this, what are you talking about? We're also going to, we're sports scholarships and we also smart. And, you know, we're in a upper middle class LA high school. Of course we're going to go, to these good schools. What do you think is happening?
It's funny. I have three daughters and my oldest is 14. And so there's part of me that wants her to watch this movie as soon as possible.
Yes.
But then there's also a part of me that is like, no, I don't want her to see that school doesn't matter. Like, I don't want her to come to that realization. Who cares? You can blow all this off and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's kind of why I know, because when we get to Slumber Party Massacre, these are women who obviously are in their late 20s trying to be high school students, and you're just looking at it going, oh, the 80s, I love how they just did that all the time. Yeah. But with this one, there is this kind of sense of this artificiality of kind of referencing what a high school movie is, and the tropes, and kind of how it's the be-all and end-all. And then to kind of have this thing of looking back at high school and going, did it really matter that much? And Booksmart's kind of all about that.
Well, I also just find it so hilarious how all these students are going to Ivy League schools. Yes. I was like, wait, that's not what happens.
Like, I know. I was like, what kind of school? Yeah. What kind of special expensive high school is this that everyone's going to an Ivy League school? I mean, bloody hell.
I know, I had no idea, because then I'm watching Molly and I'm like, well, wait, this can't be her parents paying for her to go to some crazy expensive school. She appears to live in an apartment complex. Yeah. So I was like, well, everybody doesn't have McMansions here. I mean, I know a lot of them seem to, but then I was like, well, wait, are these kids just paying? Like, are these parents Lori Loughlin? Like, are they just paying for their kids to go to school? Like, that's the moment those kids were all talking about how they're going to Harvard and Yale and Stanford. I was like, there is no way. There is no way these burnouts that I'm watching are going to Stanford.
I know. I don't even live in America or have that kind of same experience, but I'm just like going, pretty sure those are really expensive schools, even if you get some kind of scholarship, and there's only like three for each school. It's an insane kind of thing, but I love that, of course, that's a great premise, because then poor Beanie's just realized, oh, school doesn't matter? What? No. And so you get this kind of great episodic adventure, but it's just like, what?
But I think it's really great. I thought one of the best lines in that bathroom scene was, and I forget who said it, said something along the lines of, yeah, you know what? I'm pretty great at school, but it's not the only thing I do.
Oh, that's, and I, yeah, triple A.
Really,
yeah.
Fantastic. Mm. Yeah.
No, I think it is. And I think it's kind of this, yeah, I can see why you want your eldest daughter to watch it straight away, because this is a movie about not defining yourself. Mm-hmm. Not defining yourself by one thing. And I think when you're a teenager, or I can speak to my being a teenager, that was the one thing that... that is one thing you tend to do, whether it's by how your friends define you or whether it's how you think you should be defined. And I think this movie is all about going, actually, you don't have to, you're 18. That is the worst time to define yourself. You should just be trying everything. And maybe not so much what you want your 14-year to be trying in this movie.
Right,
but
right.
There's, there's this kind of just acceptance of, yeah, not defining who you are. Be open to possibilities, because magic can happen as well, but also as being hurt. But there's so much out in this kind of world than just one thing. And there's this, yeah. Yeah, celebration of that.
Also, what I really do appreciate is that we can have these conversations when talking about a movie that is basically a stupid teen party comedy. I mean, if you strip it down to its most basic, that's what this is. It's saying so much more. But if you really do just take this at face value, it's still so entertaining.
Yeah, because I think this movie kind of got lumped in with the, oh, it's the girl version of Superbad. And I definitely think you can see correlations between the two movies, because sure. They're best friends. They're both leaving high school. It's their last night. Well, the boys are trying to lose their virginity and get drunk, and mm-hmm. the girls are essentially trying to do the same thing, actually, now think about it. But it's... this kind of, but I think it's doing very, very different things, because I think each has more to say. I think the Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, I can't remember who directed Superbad, is kind of the one last hurrah. But you do get that yes. kind of friendship at the core, which kind of redeems Superbad at the end. But with his, yeah, Booksmart is all about what it's, this kind of looking back of what it's actually like to be young.
Yeah. And I don't know, I guess I'm sort of out of the loop. I mean, I can't tell you the last time I had cable, so it's not like I see a lot of, you know, previews or anything like that. So I don't know why this film just sort of was not on my radar. And I remember seeing at least the poster and stuff like that, and I lumped this in with, like, eighth grade and mid-90s, and that movie 13, and I was like, I don't want to watch a depressing movie about teenagers. Like, I did not expect this movie to be what it was when I watched it.
No, and I think a lot of coming-of-age teenage movies, especially about girls, tend to be so overwrought, because we are very overwrought creatures, but when we're, especially when we're 16, 17. So you too get that kind of sense of everything's immediate, everything has to be now, everything is so important. And I think mm-hmm. there is a sense of that in Booksmart, but they let it go of it pretty quickly, because what the girls realize is that, no, it doesn't. This doesn't all right. matter. This is just one night. Yes, it was a great night, but at the end of the day, it's just one night. And yeah, that's why I think it is. I think Olivia Wilde is just throwing everything she can. I mean, this movie has them getting drugged, to thinking they're yeah. Barbie dolls, and getting that scene was much more raunchy than I remember the first time I saw it. I was like, Caitlin Dever is going for it. I mean,
yep.
And just this whole thing.
That was a crazy set. Like, I did not. I mean, that comes so far into this film that I was on board. I knew exactly what I was watching, and that came out of nowhere, and I was like, you just did something that I did not expect, and I'm into it, so okay, let's go.
Yeah, it is this kind of weird thing, because you're just like, what, the Barbie dolls? And then all of a sudden, it kind of goes into what their whole idea of feminism is, and then, of course, that can change, and it's just a great scene, and the whole cornhole line, I just giggle every single time. It is so dumb, but I love it so much.
Such a fun film. And I want, please, Olivia Wilde, I know you're listening.
Yes.
I know you are.
Yes, of course she is listening.
please keep directing. Yeah. Please direct more. Really. And it's funny, because I know Olivia Wilde. Like, I know if you showed me a picture, I'd be able to identify Olivia Wilde. And I went through her IMDb. I don't know what I know her from. It's really weird. It's almost like the way that I feel about Oscar Isaac. Like, I could pick Oscar Isaac out of a lineup, but if I go through his filmography, I'm like, never saw any of this stuff.
He's got such a distinctive and handsome face. Every single time he pops up in something I'm watching, I'm just like going, sure. Oh, hello, sir. But it is kind of like that. I always had the same about Olivia Wilde. She's always that actor that kind of popped up for me. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do more stuff. I mean, this is very, very impressive. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you putting this in here and giving me an excuse to watch a movie that honestly I probably would have not actively avoided, but there's a good chance I never would have seen this.
Well, yeah, as you said from the poster, you don't get much from it. It's just two girls sitting down wearing and with Booksmart on the poster. It doesn't give you that much unless you kind of sense, oh, Beanie Feldstein, she's funny. But other than that, you don't get the sort of sense of what you're in for. And it is just this kind of madcap, kind of one crazy night, kind of cool little side characters kind of happening, and everyone's kind of just letting their hair down, but you don't get the sense of that. You know they're going to sense that there's going to be Barbie dolls looking at themselves naked in a mirror. You're not going to get the sense of Billy Lord writhing on the front of a car and then jumping off a boat. That boat scene, I love it so much. Skylar, I love him. He's just such this adorable, please like me character in that moment.
He's so great, and I love the fact that it doesn't go places where movies like this would. What was that movie with Jennifer Love Hewitt and I can't think of
Ethan Embry, is it?
End of
the movie.
Right. Can't Hardly Wait.
Can't Hardly Wait.
Where you just kind of, you expect he and Molly to sort of get together and, oh, I'm sure at some point they're going to end up making out. And I'm just glad that so much of this stuff that you expect does not happen.
No.
In this movie, for as quote unquote cliche as this can be at times as a teen movie, it doesn't lean into it or rely on those things quite as much as some other films that I think people would sort of relate this to.
Exactly. It doesn't really have those big romantic moments, but when it does, mm-hmm. it's not with the characters that a movie like this would have it with. Because I love my first note, because I think I didn't start writing notes until they got to the party. And my first note is George's performance of You Ought to Know is pretty solid. You Ought to Know, Alan. It's just...
I like how that's the only song that they I guess, got the rights to.
So they just sang that song.
I was like, wait, you're doing karaoke. He just did karaoke this. Why are you choosing the same song?
Exactly. But it fits in with the thing. But I kind of love that moment when you're at a party, you're young, and that person you like is paying attention to you. But then she's kind of, she looks like a chipmunk. I can't remember her name, but she's great.
She's a skateboarder.
Yes.
Like, she's not even an actress, which is incredible, I think.
She's so natural. But when she's kind of leaning back on Diva and she's got her hand, her elbow on her lap, it doesn't...
Yeah.
When you're looking at it just to think, it doesn't actually mean anything. But to her, it means everything because she's got this huge crush on her. So it's just this kind this kind of thing. And it's this great moment because you can kind of... And George is singing, you know, that song and pronouncing all the wrong... leaning on all the wrong words, but it's so much fun. It's just got these little jokes in the background while all these things are happening, which is what I love about this movie.
Yeah.
And of course, when there is the big kind of romantic moment where you think, and when Caitlin's in the pool with that scene, that amazing scene that you mentioned, it's not the romantic moment that the movie would usually give you. It's the, oh no, this is happening, but it's not done in a malicious way. It's just,
No. It's not done in a malicious way, and it's not done in a Last American Virgin way, let's say.
Yes.
It's super devastating. I mean, it is to a certain degree, but it's not that then that becomes what the rest of this movie's about or anything like that. And I do have to, I really find it interesting, and I don't know if you picked up on this, how, let's call him Cuba Gooding Jr.'s kid, how he's, you know, sort of this jock, super handsome stud, and he's going for ladies that I would say aren't classically attractive, and I just found that so delightful.
I loved this about this movie. When they're sort of going back to the bathroom scene, when they're making fun of Molly, Beanie's character, and they're sort of talking about, she's beautiful, but you'd have to put a paper bag over her personality. This is a movie that is all about, it is embracing everyone, all body types, all sexuality, all kind of types of people. And I kind of love it. So when you think, I checked it before, it's Mason Gooding, Cooper Gooding's kid, is kind of flirting with her. It's kind of this amazing kind of cool thing because he is the hunky jock. And in
it's great.
If you go back to the 80s, Beanie's character, or even Can't Hardly Wait in the 90s, which I was told, I think I watched that a couple of times in the theater. I was like, 17? Oh, God, 16? those, you're very much defined by how you look in a movie, because movies are visual, but they really sort of hammer down on the geeky kid, the curvy girl who's never going to get the guy. And that doesn't matter in this movie. Again, it's about looking back and going, that shit just doesn't matter. And it's kind of great. And so I think that pool scene and that sort of scene with that kind of just reinforces that. But then with all this insanity, oh my God, what did you actually, before I forget, what did you think of the second party that they go to with the murder party, theater party? Look, you're at 11. I need you at a 2. I enjoyed George in this movie a lot.
So did I. I found it to be, I found those scenes, I assume you've probably seen Brick before, right? Okay. I found that to be like a scene right out of that where like, I don't know what world we're in. I don't know what year these characters are right now. Like, it felt like it was something from the 30s blended into something from the 90s, something very recently. I sort of loved all these different parties they were going to. But of course, the thing that made it so great is just running into all the same characters again and again.
Yes. Like
everybody seemed to be on this same bizarre journey that these two were on.
Yes, everyone's kind of moving around to party and just kind of doing stuff. And it's just, it makes no sense of how people get there quicker. Like every time they see Gigi, it's like, how did you get here? She's just like, it's just this kind of, and it builds and builds until you finally get to the finally found the aunt's house. But if Lyft wasn't a thing and mobile phones weren't a thing in this movie, you could have easily assumed that this was 1995 or in the 80s.
Definitely.
It's, except they have those things in it that go, and some references, but I mean, like Malala or, Lyft. But other than that, this could have been set in 1985.
But it was great because they didn't lean too heavily on those references or use those things as crutches. I mean, just the fact that, they had cell phones and like you said, they could get a hold of Lyft and everything, but the whole thing was they didn't have the address. And I don't care what sort of state-of-the-art cell phone you have, that's not going to help you in that situation. And I found that endearing.
I know, I liked how they keep watching like videos of the thing trying to narrow it down, but they just couldn't. And it worked around the technology really, really well. And even when one loses the phone, runs out of power, so they again at the end don't actually have that technology, and I keep going back. I love how this movie just doesn't matter. None of it does, but yet everything is so consequential in this movie. It's quite a nice balancing act she does.
Yeah, and it's not one of those sort of, one crazy night movies that it's weird how they approach this, because it makes it look like LA is the largest small town on planet Earth. Like you said, everybody is at the same party, but it appears they're driving for hours to get to these places.
It's kind of like this movie. It's another modern movie, so I don't know if you've seen it, but if you watch Christmas movies at Christmas, I would definitely recommend Tangerine, because it's about two transsexual... And that's the same thing, because they don't have access to cars. They don't have access to anything. And it looks like LA is the largest small town ever, because they're always meeting with the same people. So I kind of imagine LA is kind of like this weird suburb kind of place. Like you're always kind of hanging in these three suburbs, but they're really large.
Yeah. Because also, like we talked about earlier, this didn't appear to be a private school.
No.
The whole time I'm like, you're in the same school district. How far could you guys live from each other?
Really far, apparently. It's kind of like in Melbourne, if you're trying to go to the north, because, yeah, Melbourne's very suburb-centric as well. Like, if you're in one suburb, you tend to hang around the suburbs around it. But this is kind of like if you're going over the river in Melbourne, which is a big deal because no one wants to do it, even though it's only a train ride. If you have to catch connecting trains, most people will go, oh, do I have to? But, yeah, it's kind of that thing of, like, are you going over the... How big... I know LA is big. I just didn't realize it was this big. Just like, no. Yeah, how long is that ride with Jason
Oh my god. Yeah, I really, when they were watching porn in that car, that really got me. That was one of the funniest scenes.
Oh, it's just so awkward of just like, oh yeah, seeing the teacher when you're like older and you're like going, hey, and that's just that same night and they're like, oh, you're no longer my students. You're no longer my principal.
And just one other thing, a lot of times people don't like to listen to podcasts where people are like, remember that scene where blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But when they talk about her masturbating with that panda and it keeps coming back around again and again, like I found that scene absolutely hilarious when they're talking about it. And then when her parents are like rubbing it in their faces at the end of this movie, I found that very charming.
It is very, very charming. And just how she's getting the information out of her and she's like, oh my God, we have secrets. I had this one story. She's like, no, you've told me about that often. It's just that this was my one thing and now you've taken it from me. It's a really just charming, charming movie. It's a little bit up and down because it's so episodic, but it kind of goes to its absolute charm of this movie. Booksmart is an absolutely charming movie. And if you haven't seen it, please watch it because it's just adorable.
Yeah, please do. Don't be like me. You look at the poster and you assume it's going to be something very depressing. It's not. It's the exact opposite.
It's just pure joy. And then you just come out of this going, I love Billie Lourd. And yeah, it's you can kind of see her mother's energy in her, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And with that, we will go on to our second double feature, the equally as charming, but in very different ways, Slumber Party Massacre 2. Now, Doug, what would be your first trailer?
My first trailer, I decided to go with two trailers here, and I decided to sort of approach it from the standpoint of, let's say somebody saw this movie in the theaters back in 87, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm. 87. Yep.
And they haven't seen it since. What are two things that they would remember about this movie? So my first trailer is going to be the 1990 John Waters film, Cry Baby.
Oh, perfect. Why didn't I think of this one? Yes.
He's been hurt. He's been mistreated. He's been misunderstood. He's Crybaby Walker.
Yeah, you're looking to rumble. You're looking at me because I'm the king. I'm the king, Crybaby, with a tear in my eye.
I'm so tired of being good.
This is a king, you gonna cry. Oh, baby, cry, baby, cry, baby, cry, baby, cry, baby, cry.
Good girls want him bad.
Hi.
Bad girls want him worse.
Look, cry, baby. You scorch me, man.
Yeah, it's one that is forgotten, like that later John Waters, like Cecil B. Demented era where he's not firing on all cylinders, but I still find it very, very interesting and sort of a lot of fun. And I also love it because it's just, I don't want to, make any bold statements here, but I feel like it's one of Johnny Depp's last roles before he's like slathered in makeup and prosthetics and everything.
I think you might be right.
It's just Johnny Depp being Johnny Depp. And Johnny Depp in a John Waters movie. Like, it's basically like John Waters' Rebel Without a Cause, if you want to think of it that way. And I love the fact, the best thing about this, and this is not going to spoil anything for anyone that might want to check it out, I love that the ending of this movie is basically everyone crying a single tear, but Johnny Depp's character arc is such that he's finally able to cry out of both eyes at the end of the movie.
Yes! Yes! That is such... Oh, I can't believe I didn't think about John Waters with this movie. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that's a great trailer because I think it's this weird, bizarre... It's not maybe his best movie, but I think there's a lot in it to... though when you're talking about John Waters' best movies, it's more the Pink Flamingo. This is not as punk, but it has got this kind of really cool rockabilly kind of thing. And you're right, it is his Rebel Without a Cause because he loves melodrama. And I think this kind of fits in perfectly and it's a perfect trailer. And I'm kicking myself, I did not think of John Waters. because my first trailer, I'm going from another 80s band horror movie. This one's from 1988. It is Black Roses.
Let's make Blood City.
But the nightmare of every parent in town has just arrived.
The disciples of the devil are invading our town and threatening to steal our children away from us.
Turn up the power!
And they try to stop it.
They don't understand what a great honor this is. They didn't have to pick Mel Basin for their first concert.
I don't suppose there's any real harm to them.
But once their fears are laid to rest, the stage is set. The message given. Virus of evil turned loose.
Essentially, a band comes to town and kind of... half summers the devil, turns kids into demonic kind of killers. It's kind of an occult. It's a really bizarre little movie. You can tell it was even made with less money than Slumber Party Massacre. I mean, compared to this, Slumber Party Massacre had a massive budget, but it's this tiny little movie. It is bat crazy. It's got, it's just one of those movies where this heavy metal band comes to town, and all the adults are furious about this. But they end up performing and then the kids start going crazy and it is kind of a great, satanic panic movie. And yeah, it is just a really great little dirty little movie.
Wow. I have not seen that. I'm writing that down right now cause I got to check that out.
Yeah. It is really, really great. It is just this kind of, yeah, it's kind of this perfect, don't let your kids watch MTV kind of thing. Because bad things will happen. And it's got Julia Adams in it, who of course was in Creature from the Black Lagoon. She's playing a much older so yeah, it's kind of just one of those weird strange little creatures that only could come out of the 80s.
Wow, okay, very cool.
What would be your second trailer?
Well, I got the greaser thing out of the way, and just as you did, I think the other thing people would remember and should remember about this movie is the female band
aspect.
So mine is the very difficult to see, and I think that's the sad part of this, is the 1988 film Satisfaction.
I just want this summer, just one summer, please.
I'm talking about a good time here. The entire summer at the beach, we're getting paid to do
it. We finally got a chance for someone a little class. I say we do it.
Well, let's vote on it.
Aye. Making it is their dream.
We better not blow this audition.
This place is heaven.
This summer is their chance.
Dude, yo, can't you be subtle?
Who the hell are you, people?
I'm Jenny Lee. We're here for the audition. We have come a long way. We deserve our shot up there.
They're playing for what they want.
See where I grew up, people usually end up where they started. And I've got to take it out.
Directed by Joan Freeman, and it stars Justine Bateman, Liam Neeson, and Julia Roberts in her first major film role.
Oh, wow.
And it's not great. It's not a great film. It's just about... you know, girls that are in a band and they're up and coming and, oh, are they ready to play their big show? I think they're invited to London or something to play a big show. And, you know, there's band turmoil and issues with relationships with men and stuff like that. Mm. Not a great film, but Justine Bateman is the front person of this band and she does all her own singing in this.
Oh, wow. And
it's all just Justine Bateman covers of famous songs. And I know, like, there's no way, I don't think there's any chance we'll see it on Blu-ray or 4K just because of the music rights issues.
Yeah.
This was something that Jamie and I wanted to do for our podcast, but You can't find it streaming anywhere. There's DVDs that, you know, on eBay are selling for $150. We weren't going to do that. So it is a shame that you're not going to be able to see this. But I remember as a kid, this was played on HBO all the time.
Oh, no, I haven't seen this. I would love to see it. But yeah, if it's...
Yeah,
I'm just looking. It looks like very difficult to see. But that looks like it would be an amazing, amazing trailer. I need to see this. But no, that looks absolutely amazing. I can't believe like Julia Roberts and Liam Neeson are in this, and Debbie Harry.
Debbie Harry's in it too. Scott Coffey is in it as well. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh, that looks absolutely amazing.
It's fantastic in the way that please do not spend $150 on it. You will be very disappointed. Let me say that first and foremost.
Oh, you expect the second coming and what you get is a 1980s movie with Justin Bateman singing.
You're like Justin Bateman doesn't sound that great. What was this idiot talking about?
But if you see it in a retrospective, you'd be amazed. It's amazing how sometimes context of watching a movie can change your point of view on it completely.
Yep. Exactly.
I picked too many options for this movie.
Oh, great.
But I... actually, you know what? I am going to go with Okay, screw it. I'm just going to go with Rock and Roll High School from 1979. Mm-hmm. Bring on the Ramones.
Okay.
It's 1980. Welcome to Rock and Roll High School.
Rock and Roll High School?
Do you want to stay there?
I am Miss Togar, and I am the new principal of this school. And who are you?
I'm Riff Randall, rock and roller.
This movie's fun. Again, it's just fun. It's PJ Souls. I mean, yeah, goddamn, it's the Ramones. And how can you not love anything with the Ramones in it? I mean, I think I even love the friggin' Spider-Man movies just because they always end on a friggin' Ramones song. And then, even though I didn't enjoy the movie, I'm like, but I'm listening to Will You Be My Girlfriend? And that's cool. So, that is my second trailer.
Yeah, this is a movie that I'm not crazy about, but I know that it's my problem, not the movie's problem. Like, enough people love this movie where I'm like, I've watched it a couple times, and every time after I watch it, I'm like, yeah, this is not for me, but I know it's my fault.
I could absolutely see that, but I have a special kind of thing with the Ramones, and just kind of one of those bands where when someone, I was 18, 19, was moving away, I moved away from home for the first time in a completely different city, trying to make new friends, and this, a very sheltered upbringing, and then I remember a friend of mine put on the Ramones and my world was changed forever. I didn't know music could sound like this, and I think I like Rock and Roll High School mainly because of the Ramones. If it didn't have the Ramones, I think it'd be wouldn't work as a movie, but because they're there, I'm just like going, yeah.
No, that's great. And if they had a movie starring the Misfits, I probably would have felt the same way.
Exactly.
It was the same thing where when I heard the Misfits, I was like, wait, this isn't stuff that's played on the radio. I didn't know there was music like this out there. I didn't know people were making music like this. So, and music is, you know, to any teenager, it's pretty important. And when you mix that with film and, you know, that's important stuff when you're coming up, when you're book smart age, let's say.
Exactly. And that's kind of how I connected to it. I think I was watching something with my partner and Misfits came on and I was just like, holy shit, they're playing the Misfits. I've got something to say. I Killed Your Baby Today isn't usually a choice of song that just gets played anywhere. And especially considering that song is one of the most singable, considering what the lyrics are. I got very excited.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I lost you there for one second.
I don't know if
it was you or me, but
it was probably me. Okay. I was just sort of saying.
That's all right.
Yeah, but anyway, that's my second trailer. And with that, we're going to be going into Slumber Party Massacre 2.
The bad news is, she thinks he's back.
Dead.
Reincarnated just in time for Halloween comes Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Yoo-hoo! I'm home.
think your sweetheart's been taking too many diet pills.
Here's a chicken sandwich if you want it. Yeah.
She should have listened to her sister.
Don't pick up all the way.
Because when she and her band get ready to party,
do anything you want to. Good time.
It's more than just a great time.
I didn't know girls really did this stuff.
It's Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Now it's time for the fun part.
Now, you think you have a bigger history with this, because I know you've already done an episode on Good Times, Great Movies with this movie. It's kind of... I don't even know how to approach this movie. So you start.
No, it's... And you would think, if I'm coming to you with this movie, you would assume that I have a big history with it, when in actuality, I don't. This was a movie that was such a pleasant surprise.
Yes.
I saw this a long time ago. I saw this as a teenager. I know I did. And this past summer, we did on our podcast, we did the Summer of Sequels. And my God, do we watch some horrible things. Like when one of the best movies you watched is The Karate Kid Part 2, you've made some terrible choices in your life. And that's kind of what we did. But I wanted to extend it into October so we could watch some horror sequels. And I kind of just thought, okay, I remember this being dumb fun, so let's watch this. And my God, was I was enthralled with, like, I was so into this movie, and I don't even know why. To this very day, to us talking, after me suggesting it, I don't even know what it is about this. But it was one of those things where, after I watched it, I went to Letterboxd, and I was like, how did I possibly give this 2 stars? This is an amazing film. Like, this is a 4-star movie. And this is a movie that I love that you paired it with Booksmart, because I really do feel that it's very similar in the relationship of these characters. I watch a lot of horror films. I watch a lot of slashers. Mm. And, of course, I watch a lot of, you know, 80s and... you know, maybe into the 90s and perhaps back into the 70s a little bit. And the trope that I hate is when they're trying to get up the kill count in these movies, so they pack it full of these teenagers who don't seem to want to be with one another. Like, so many teenagers in these movies, I'm always questioning, like, why are they hanging out? They don't even seem to like each other. And through this film, I bought that these girls were legitimate friends.
You really, really do, because they actually, except for the one guy who is the worst, TJ.
Oh, God, yes, he's the worst. Yeah, you're right.
Jesus Christ, even on this watch, I was just like, what? Yep. Why are you there? Everyone else actually likes each other. They get along. They actually want to be kind to each other, which is very unusual in slasher movies, because one of the trailers I was going to pick would have been Happy Birthday to Me, which is a slasher mm-hmm. I love a lot, but there is that.
I love that movie. It's great.
And it's kind of, but it does have that same sense of, like, I'm not entirely sure why these guys are friends. I think the movie kind of explains it a little bit, as that they're in the top of their class, so therefore they think they have to hang out. And in that situation, of course, you're going to have someone who's going to go through and, most ridiculous ending ever, which I love, but you're going to have them and taking them out. And you do have that sense of the high kill count, even though that movie goes yeah. into some very bonkers, amazing places. And with this, no, these are just friends, and you are kind of hanging out with them a lot, to the point where I kind of forgot that I was in a slasher movie until the kills yes. actually start happening, which is, like, only in the last chunk. You don't really have... You have the dream sequences, but you don't really have right. any actual kills right to the end. So you're just literally watching these teenagers dick around the house, and it's great.
Yeah. I was okay with that.
Yeah, me too.
Strangely enough, I would have been fine if that was the entire movie, because, like you said, nobody starts getting killed until, I don't know, 2/3 of the way through yeah. this thing. And I kind of, while I enjoy it and it's so goofy, it's just a blast, I didn't need it. I could have hung out with these girls for this weekend. And you would expect in this movie, like, and very early on, I remember thinking this, like, the lead singer, you kind of expect for her to be this bitch, and Crystal Bernard, like, this super hot hunk guy comes to watch them play and everything, and I'm like, oh, she's gonna steal that guy away from her. No, none of that happens. And even after they're, you know, even after this guy and Crystal Bernard walk off, and she's like, hey, we're going away for the weekend if you want to come see us, like, her friends aren't even like, you are so gonna get laid. They actually say, you're gonna have a boyfriend. Like, this is so sweet and innocent in this dumb slasher.
Yes, even the drummer Sally, who's my favorite kind of character, she's kind
my
of meant to
favorite
be
favorite character.
Oh, she's kind of the ditz, but she's actually the smart one because she's the one who's writing songs. I mean, she's taking this weekend as like a work weekend. She's like to the side, like writing her song that's gonna make them big. And it's kind of, yeah, it's just this really sweet. I mean, yeah, I mean, when you're sort of saying, oh, we're gonna boyfriend, I mean, she keeps fantasizing about hunky football guy, but it's kind of done in this really sweet, innocent way. And it's kind of, yeah, I don't know, it's just such a sweet movie that I think wrote all their songs. I'm not 100% sure, it feels like they did. And it's, yeah, it's just this really sweet movie that you just actually want to hang out with them. And then these, but again, kind of like Booksmart, all these kind of strange things start happening, and it is, of course, in the sense that the main character, Courtney, Crystal Bernard, is having these dreams about this killer because she and her sister survived the first Lumber Party Massacre, which I watched the two close together, actually. And, like, the first one, even though it was meant to be, like, a piss-take satire of it, is actually just a straight, you got a psycho, he's hunting these girls, it's a really great movie. But this one takes it in this completely different direction. It is about as much about PTSD and survival as it is about being a good friend.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that my teenage self, that's probably why I didn't like this. I enjoyed the first one. I remember really liking the first one, and I felt like at that time, at that age, I probably didn't want something that was super goofy. Like, I wanted something that was equally sort of as mean-spirited as that first one is. And maybe it's just the years and the, you know, the age that I am now. That wasn't what I was looking for from one of these movies. And I appreciated how sort of light and silly all of this is. Even the death scenes are kind of super goofy. And like you said, Sally's a breath of fresh air. Anytime she's on screen, and you're right, she is looking at this as a work weekend. Like, she's the only one who's not having a guy come there and try and hit on her. Like, she's like, I'm going to sit on this couch, I'm going to write Pie in the Sky, and I'm going to make this work. Just the fact that that is the song that she thinks is going to be a huge hit is so funny.
Oh, it's adorable. But the fact that the song has a thing called I Want to Be Your Tokyo Convertible, I think this is a world where maybe Pie in the Sky might be a hit.
Exactly. Tokyo Convertible. What a wild. That's the songs in this are great. And the songs that they sing are by a legit band called Wednesday Week. And I would say, look them up. It's great. Their stuff is fantastic. And I never would have found them if it hadn't have been for this movie. But they're great. They don't sing Tokyo Convertible, of course, but you know, the two songs that they sing, the one in the garage and the one in the basically abandoned condo or wherever they are.
No, because they're really great songs and they're really, really catchy. I think I just could have latched onto Tokyo Convertible because I was like going, I don't know what this is.
Because the girls sing along to it in the car, and I'm like, this is horrible. How are you into this song?
Because the other ones are great, and they've kind of gone from my memory. But no, I love how this movie is pretty much a musical. I mean, because you've got, they pretty much sing full songs. Even the killer at the end, I don't know what it, the driller killer, I guess, he sings two full songs when he's murdering people. And I think the last song he sings twice, because that chase goes on for a long time. So I'm pretty...
That goes on for way too long. Like, you talked about padding in this movie. Give me another song rather than this chase around this construction site. That's the movie does lose me at the end, you know, but you know what, if I don't like the last 5 minutes of this, it really doesn't detract from my enjoyment of this thing. But the end, the what, 5, 6, 7, 25 endings that they give this movie is terrible. Just bad decisions all around at that point.
I know, because I think you could have ended it one... If you wanted to end it in the fact that... Okay, this is a movie you really can't spoil because it is Slumber Party Massacre 2. But when Crystal Bernard wakes up in the mental hospital at the end, so you don't... But it's kind of done in a way where you don't know if she's still dreaming or if she is the one that was actually in the hospital, not her sister, or a multiple of other reasons. It's, it feels like that Nightmare on Elm Street ending where you have to have an ending... because you have to have the Carrie's hand coming up at the end in a horror movie kind of thing. And that's kind of what it feels like. I mean, it could have ended a number of different ways. And yes, the last 5 minutes kind of lose you because you've just been running around this construction site with him singing the song for the second time, which is fine. But
Well, I think, you know, you bring up Carrie and why not have a direct Carrie ending? Like when they're carting her friend away under a sheet at the end of this, and she decides to look at her, why not just have her friend grab her hand, done, the end, or her friend smiles, done, finished. We don't need to go to this cabinet of Dr. Caligari mental hospital at the end of this. Like, we don't need any of that nonsense.
No, you could have heard her just say buzz buzz or sing.
Right.
Yeah, it's
the end.
The end. But no, because it is a horror movie in 1987, you have to have the multiple is it or isn't it endings. which tends to happen, which is probably why I'm maybe a bigger fan of early 80s slashes, because they just just cut it and it's done. And though in saying that, I could probably pick five later horror movies in the 80s that I love.
But I think that's sort of why I enjoy this. Because like you said, yes, I am probably a bigger fan of early 80s. But just the fact that this has the guts to do things that make no sense.
Oh.
Things that should... Like, this should not be a movie.
No, it shouldn't.
Like, you should not... You should not go from a deranged maniac, like an escaped whatever he was, with a drill, to what appears to be a figment of her imagination that manifests into reality for some reason as a greaser with a drill at the end of his... Like, you should not be doing this. This makes zero sense whatsoever. But they did it. And I enjoyed it.
No, you're right, because there's no rules at all to this movie.
Mm-mm.
And it's a figment of her imagination. She's having nightmares, and then all of a sudden, it becomes real. And because I always thought, I had this weird memory, because I always think Sally's pimple head always kind of was bigger in my memory for the first time I watched it. So I kind of thought it was all... Maybe the ending was a dream. Maybe not, but no, it's not. It's real. She is about to fool around with this, with hunky football guy. And of course the drill guy just plunges, which is quite a fun kill in itself. Like because you don't know if you're asleep or awake or what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this kind of makes no, there's no rules to this movie and it should not work. Yet you're watching it smiling from ear to ear going, this is fun. I like these characters. I like the fact that they, are supportive of each other. Like every single time Courtney has an episode, they're like, you're fine. Just go there. You're hungover. Have a bath. It's all good.
Just have a hand sandwich. Everything will be fine. Don't worry about it. A hand sandwich that is just slathered in so much ketchup / blood. And you're right. They are wildly supportive of her. Like, all the time, her friend's like, it's fine. You're just a little hungover. I didn't feel well earlier either.
Yeah, but what is with the condiments in this movie? Yes, that ham sandwich has far too much ketchup. But that bowl with the mustard, when they're having, like, the corn dogs, that is a massive bowl of... That is way too much mustard.
Yeah. This movie is so much fun. I cannot express to people, if they have not seen this, how much fun this movie is. Like, just the fact that they have some weird car washing montage in the middle of this movie for no reason. Like, it's almost as though, because the one woman, the one that plays Amy, Kimberly MacArthur, she was a Playboy playmate.
Yes.
And it seemed to be an excuse to get her into a bikini. Because the other thing about this movie that I found really, really interesting is their pillow fight that then turns into sort of a choreographed dance sequence.
Yes, and only one gets naked. That was...
one. Yes. Did you look into that?
I did. I did as well. Because I was confused.
It was... So, It was so fascinating, the fact that, they were, at one point, they were all supposed to be naked, but Crystal Bernard wasn't going to do that. She was already in It's a Living at this point.
Yes.
Wings was like 3 years away.
She's not doing that. And then Google played Amy basically said, no, I was a Playboy playmate. I'm not doing that anymore. And then one of them chickened out at the last minute.
It was sad.
Yes.
She cried. She cried on set. She broke down and cried. And the director, I mean, first of all, good on the director to not make her do this.
Yes.
But yeah, she broke down, and the lead singer, Sheila, was like, eh, fuck it, whatever, I'll do it. I don't care.
But it's just very awkward when she just starts like stripping and everyone's laughing at her. And it's just like going, okay.
But that dance montage is great because they intercut these scenes of just single shots of them dancing, like strangely seductive by a light, which for no reason, looking directly at the camera.
Yeah.
But then they're all in a row. They're doing choreographed dancing. Like, it is so much fun. This movie. And another scene that I absolutely love is when they think for some reason that Sally's in the kitchen trash compactor. And they decide not to look and call the police. And all this appears to take hours.
Yes.
Like, you could have just looked.
You're right. It's just these kind of, every sort of decision this movie makes is to try and stretch it out longer. Like the weird montages, them playing all the full songs. But that is kind of what I like about the movie.
Yeah.
It's not kind of the weirdness. It's not the hallucinations. It's the fact that they're going to have like a weird washing the car thing when they're practicing. It's the kind of okay, we have to make this movie at least a movie length. Because if you actually cut all of the stuff, it's barely going to be 30 minutes, but it is kind of wonderful. And I don't know, you love the girls so much that you're just like, I'm willing to go with all of this. And the weird blow up doll and everything like that. They are doing exactly what teenagers would do, but at the same time, not. It's a very strange disconnect, but I really love it.
Exactly. No, I couldn't have said it better. This movie is just fun. And honestly, give me a 77-minute movie. I'm thrilled when those come along. I'm super happy to sit down and watch those.
Me too. I mean, there is something to be said about a long movie that I do enjoy, but when you give me a 77-minute movie, I'm just like, yes, this is exactly what I want. As I get older, my attention span isn't what it used to be. So it just, just give me it.
Yeah, this is another movie that is, it's a slasher, but it is one, as we said, that is not mean-spirited in any way. I wasn't, even the whoever that guy was who shows up and is a total dick, like, I wasn't rooting for anyone to die. I didn't want any of these poor kids to die. Like, I wanted to hang out with them. That's what I wanted to do. Like, I rarely want to do that when watching a Nightmare on Elm Street or, Friday the 13th. I rarely want to hang out with those characters. They all kind of seem like assholes. I want to be at this house with these people.
This is true, because slashers, I guess, by nature, but they always kind of seem mean-spirited. And there's times I love that. There's way when you do a mean-spirited movie, I'm like, yes! Like, the Happy Birthday to Me, or the Just Before Dawn, I think, is just so...
Oh my god, Just Before Dawn is so great.
So mean-spirited in the best way, with George Kennedy just riding a horse. It's just like, is there any way I can sit down during this movie? Okay, we'll give you a horse. It's just glorious, but this one is, you want to hang out with these characters. It's kind of why probably it took a while to get around to the slasher, because I love them now, but maybe it's still not my favorite horror genre. But you kind of go, you're just waiting for people to die, and they're usually annoying. Usually, like my beloved Friday the 13th, I can find weird quirks in each character, which entertains me.
Sure.
But I don't actually want to spend time in that house with them, because they're all really annoying. And of course, with this, I kind of want to be part of the party. It looks fun eating corn dogs with too much mustard. I would have, actually, I still would be all up for that, but not with the too much mustard. That's gross.
Sure.
Yeah, but it's, give me those montages. Give me watching them practice. It's, and even the killer is interesting. I like the fact that he just plays guitar with a drill and sings. It is very John Waters in a way.
Yeah. It makes zero sense, and I'm okay with that.
Yes. Oh, one point I wanted to bring up when you're sort of saying, Sheila's who's doing the weird dance with the lamppost, and she's looking directly into the camera. That happens a lot in this movie. Every single time someone's talking to Courtney, it's like it's friggin' Silence of the Lambs. They're just looking, talking directly at her. And
oh my god, yeah, when Sally's got that zit on her face, I was like, Sally, stop talking to me. This is making me very uncomfortable. I don't like this.
I know! And I'm just like, did Jonathan Demme watch Slumber Party Massacre 2 and go, I know how to use that. It's just, I don't know if it's because it was the cheapest way to actually shoot a thing, and I don't know much about the director. So I don't know if she was like, yeah, I'll just get them to do it this way. But I was just looking at it going, slightly Silence of the Lambs.
This is slightly, yes.
Very slightly, nothing else. Just that's the, and I know Demi's not the only one to use that kind of way to do something, but that's just what it reminded me of.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. No, this was, did you look into the driller killer guy?
No.
I was, oh my god, do you know what that guy does nowadays?
No, I do not.
He owns the Detroit Red Wings and the Detroit Tigers.
What?
And if you're, I don't know, I mean, I don't know how aware you are, but those are professional hockey and professional Major League Baseball teams. Yeah, his dad owned Little Caesar's Pizza.
Oh my god, that is amazing. Because this is the guy that oh my god, he does. No, this is the guy who like does a rockabilly thing and sings Buzz Buzz.
He's doing splits.
He's doing splits. He's actually
doing like the Worm.
Yeah,
decades before I think anybody ever did the Worm before.
It's actually really impressive, his dance moves. I was actually kind of impressed just because I didn't recognize him. I thought, oh, maybe they did get a dancer because he's going for it, full tilt.
He's going full on. Plus, he's wearing leather pants, a giant leather jacket. Like, this is not easy to dance around with all that leather and fringe.
No, it is not. I mean, just the heat alone. No, I know we keep going back to, you know, it's fun, it's great. But this movie really is. It's just, there's nothing kind of deeper themes or anything like that to it, but you don't really need it. You just need a guy running around in leather pants and a drill on the end of his guitar, and then girls singing about, well, I don't know, songs in their band, and it's just a good time. I don't know, it just makes you feel happy afterward, even though I think actually when they start getting murdered, the movie kind of dips, because I think the pacing goes off a little bit, and it sort of starts going a little bit samey, but at the same time, yep, there's some really kind of great moments of them having to sneak, go out of the house, sneak back into the house. It's fun.
Oh my god, just when they have to go into the house to get the car keys, and then for some reason decide to go then through the house to leave by the front door where they came in the back door. Yeah, like you said, these decisions are all made to get this to feature film length, and it becomes very apparent once the murders start to happen. Because before that, I'm sure that there was a lot of padding going on. I mean, they're playing full songs, as we said, but it didn't feel awkward until the last third of this movie.
It really doesn't. I mean, you're happy to go along with it, and then when the murders actually start, it just starts getting very like that scene. I think it's when, is it Sheila who's by the door? The other two girls have locked themselves in, and she's yes, banging on the door, and he's just like dancing up in the hallway, just singing. And it takes,
oh my god,
ages.
He's taking like two steps forward, one step back, two steps. I'm like, this is taking forever. I don't know how much stuff they piled in front of that door. They're taking it off one little piece at a time.
Yeah.
It takes forever.
It just takes forever. And it's kind of like when you're watching, you've seen Pieces, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, thought you had. Of course, you've seen Pieces. There's a scene where, and again, a movie that will just film things and not cut because they're trying to pad it out, like when the girl is getting into the pool and she's getting mm-hmm. undressed. Usually you'll have little cut things in there, because when someone's mm-hmm. actually taking off their clothes, it's really unsexy because it's awkward,
right?
And you're just watching it full on, and this movie does the same thing, but it's not with a woman getting undressed. It's just like, oh, we're actually watching him dance up and down the hallway. without a cut, right. because right. it's going to take longer than if you start editing it, it'll cut down the time. It's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, because in this movie, when people get undressed, it's not awkward because there are feathers falling all over the place into the food that they're eating. Yes.
Oh my god, that just is mustard and feathers. It's kind of the thing of what guys think a slumber party is. Oh, we'll have a pillow fight. Pillow fights hurt. No one has pillow. Who actually has pillow fights?
I loved when the guys are peeping at them, dancing, and then, you know, the one girl, like we said, gets topless, and this guy's going crazy, and I'm like, you're such a weird perv, and then 5 minutes later, I'm like, wait, you're dating her? That seems like an odd thing to get so excited about, where you're dating and clearly having sex with this person.
Yes, and he's getting really excited. His friend is standing right next to him, also looking at it. It should be an awkward moment, but it's like a, ooh, boobs. And then, 10 minutes later, they're sleeping together, making very strange noises. It's like friggin' Friday the 13th. Nightmare on Elm Street with Tina. And it's just like, what sounds are they making?
Oh, my. And I am glad you gave me some sort of a second outlet, I guess, to talk about this film. This is so much fun.
It was a lot of fun. And it's just a great movie. And these it worked out to be a great pairing. Because, again, sometimes I just pick a pairing on a feeling. Like, my brain just, like, goes, mm-hmm. this might work. And then I watched it and went, oh, good, this does actually work. This is good. So, no,
I was really impressed because... When I suggested this, you were so quick. I mean, immediately Booksmart came back. I was like, what's happening here? Like, how did this go to the top of your head immediately? And like I said, when I watched it, I completely understood.
No, it is a really, really fun double. And yeah, because both movies are just light, they're fun, they're breezy. Mm-hmm. They've just got some really great moments, people you want to hang out with. And yeah, it'd be a great double, even if I did insist on putting Collateral as one of the trailers for Booksmart.
That's all right. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. Come on. You know, people... I love the idea of watching these trailers, though.
Yeah.
Because... And I don't care. I don't care how bizarrely tangentially related they may be.
That's kind of what I like about the trailers is I can go, look, I'm picking one thing that connects them. Just do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And with that, thank you so much for coming on. This was an absolute blast. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you online?
Sure. Just wherever you listen to podcasts, find Good Times, Great Movies. We're on most of the social platforms. It's usually at GTGMcast. So look us up. Go through. You know, if we covered a movie that you love, listen to us drag it through the mud.
Actually, you're a lot kinder to those movies. I haven't listened to the whole back catalog yet, but you're surprisingly kinder than I would have expected to these ones. You do try to go, oh, this was entertaining. It was dumb, but it was entertaining.
Oh, yeah. No, there are some that we absolutely detest, and we do get some blowback. Both of us, we hated Tron. Like, hated it. Jamie fell asleep. She never even finished watching the movie. She hated it so much. We hated Tron so much. Yeah. We hated Liquid Sky.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, those are the two that people give us the most crap about.
I still need to see Liquid Sky. I will one day. No, it's thank you so much for coming on. I think we also had a few other doubles mentioned, so this could it could work out really well. Yeah. But yes, thank you for listening again to Schlock and Awe. If you want to follow us online, it's just Twitter and Instagram at @SchlockandAwe1. If you want to follow me, it's just on Reading Geek. And yeah, rate and review on Apple iTunes if you like the show. And yeah, we will be back next week with another double. Thanks, guys. Bye.